from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with arts educator Nate Heck about the video series he's created to get kids excited about art.
I'll introduce you to Ron Caltabiano, the new dean of Butler University's Jordan College of Fine Arts.
And then I'll find out what the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra has in its stocking for this holiday season. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What Will We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Artrageous with Nate is a new video series created by art educator Nate Heck to make learning art fun for kids. Travis DiNicola spoke with Nate about the show.
Let's start with your own interest and passion for arts education, for painting, sculpture. What's driving all this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been teaching art for nearly 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of started off at the high school level and then took a break, and my wife and I, we lived over in France for a while, which obviously you can see that really sparked my love for art history.
Sure.
And then came back, and now I've been teaching elementary school for nearly 7 years. So
okay.
That's kind of the whole gamut of, and I also teach video production at IUPUI. So kind of tying all those in, it kind of led itself to this Artrageous with Nate program.
Where is it you're teaching now?
Mount Comfort Elementary School.
Mm-hmm.
It's near East Side. Okay. Not too far from here. So.
And so were you finding that your students were just not that into art history, or was that part of it?
I would definitely say that's part of it. I came, I have a huge passion for art history.
Yeah.
And I my experience with it, unfortunately, was always kind of dry and distant. And I was always searching for videos that the kids might like to watch that were mm-hmm. driven on art history. And there was a lot of animation out there, but unfortunately, just it seemed like everything I would order just couldn't keep their attention.
Okay.
And so that kind of just led me to making some of my own, like, little short videos.
Yeah.
And playing around with that, and kind of just got some really good feedback from parents and kids, and decided I was like, okay, I'm just going to try it. Why not? So.
Now, art education is obviously part of your background. Is video production part of your background as well, or?
Yeah, I was actually, I'm a graduate of Ball State, and
mm-hmm.
I have a minor in TCOM, and
okay.
I've always just kind of, I actually run at the school I'm at, the news production team that we have, and so I've always, and I teach it at IUPUI, so it just kind of, it led itself just because I knew that if I tried mm-hmm. to start this, I could probably edit most of it myself as well, which would, be a lot easier to begin here, so. It felt like I was combining everything I love to do into
mm-hmm.
one thing. So I couldn't go wrong with that.
So you started off making some shorter videos, and then the one that I've seen on your website, Artrageous with Nate, is it's a good, it would be a half an hour, segment.
Yeah.
And it's all about the artist George Seurat, and really fun piece to watch.
Hey, thanks.
Why'd you start with Seurat?
Wow, good question. I was going through several different artists, and well, for one, I just loved all the connections with the science with him. One thing I push is I'm always trying to figure out ways to get the kids to understand how science might relate to art
mm-hmm.
or things of that nature. So I knew that the pointillism technique, being a graphics person, I understood there was a lot of connections to science and the printer and dots per square inch. So I was really interested in that connection. And then I knew that we had art here at the IMA,
mm-hmm.
like his original pieces. That's one of the things I really am wanting to do is I want kids to feel comfortable going to an art museum again.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I mean, like, being in France and being able to travel around, I really want kids to understand like what it feels like, what it smells like, to really see the scale of a painting. That's one thing that drives me nuts, showing kids pictures in a textbook. They can't physically see a 10-foot by 7-foot painting on a you know, 12 by 7 inch paper or something. So
right, and like, yeah. Well, there's that one scene in the video where you were talking about Sunday in the Park, and you drop down the, you know, essentially a minivan
right there
to compare the size of the painting to a minivan. You know, one thing I thought that was really fascinating, the way that you structured this Rott video, is that you talk about him in the beginning a little bit, so we have a sense of who he is, and then you walk into the IMA, and the camera's following you, and you're about to sort of take the, you know, the kids who are watching, essentially, you know, into the gallery, and then you stop, and then you spend, oh, I don't know, 15 minutes or more talking about the science behind it, and then you go into the video, and into the gallery, excuse me, to actually see the painting finally. And it's kind of this moment of, oh, wait a second, we're at the museum, but we're kind of not ready to really understand what we're looking at. So let's take a step back, let's take a break. And it is interesting, because as you said, your video, at least with this Rott piece, is as much about the science, it seems, as it is the art and art history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to pause because, you know, how many kids, if they do go to an art museum, they come back and I'll ask them, you know, what was the experience like? And they're kind of like blank face. They're not sure how to explain it. They don't know what they actually saw. And so I really wanted to give them, before we even started looking at his paintings, one, a background of Seurat, and starting to understand who he was and what he was like. And I really want to get into the human side of these artists and not give them, you know, that's the worst thing, I think, is when kids get into the museum and all they do is, the only thing they know about the artist is the placard on the wall.
Right.
And so I want them to come up to a painting and be like, wow, I know that guy. And it's maybe some little funny, quirky thing about him. Like, and so they kind of relate to the artist. And so then they're seeing it in a whole new light. They're like, wow, I know him. I recognize the name. And so I really want it to be fun. I wanted them to see it in a whole new way and to understand that, you know, they can go to the museum and then all of a sudden be excited about it. Like, oh my goodness, are you serious? This painting's at my museum down the street. And, you know, I'm really wanting to get into even more museums, obviously. So,
well, tell me about working with the IMA, because that's a pretty big deal that they let you
shoot
video in their galleries. That's not something everyone gets to do.
Yes, they were a little apprehensive, but they were game, and I am super appreciative of it. And it was it was really exciting. It was nice. I mean, they let us come in after hours, and we were able to really get a. We wanted to get a lot of scale to get that idea of, you know, if you stand back, you're going to be able to see how all those dots blend colors. So, yeah, they were really, really supportive, and they've been really supportive thus far with the program. And I think now that they see, you know, they see the product and they're like, oh, yes, okay, that's what you wanted to do. That's awesome. All right, now what can we do to help? So, I'm really excited at the, especially with museums and schools. That's, you know, that's really where I'm trying to hone in on. So
now I know you want to produce more of these.
Yes, definitely.
What's the next artist or style or work that you have on the list here to tackle?
Yeah, I mean, right now I've got a couple. Locally, we're working on one with the Children's Museum on Dale Chihuly.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about this one. We've got he's agreed to let us build basically a 40-foot replica of his sculpture, that Fireworks of Glass, which a lot of the kids understand, but we're going to make
scene it. Too.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, sure. Scene. And so they understand that. So we're going to make one out of empty Pepsi bottles.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. We have collected, I mean, Pepsi's donated a lot of them, but we've recycled tons of hundreds. And so we're taking, I think, almost 1,000, and we're cutting them up. We're painting them. Mm-hmm. And then we're building this 40-foot sculpture out of these things, which it should be really cool. So, that's kind of a local one, and we've got one I'm working on with the Museum of Modern Art. We're going to do Jackson Pollock.
Mm-hmm.
He's just one of my favorites, and he's one that I think that the kids really love when I talk about him, his quirkiness and whatnot. So I'm excited to go out there. Going to go, you know, see his house. That's really what I'm excited about, to show the kids, like, this is where he lived. You know, this is where he, you know, he made art and his studio. So those are a couple that were really, you know, moving in production closer and closer. So
I could ask you about, you know, what's the time frame, when are we going to get to see these, but I know that right now part of the process is also not just finding the time but also the funding to be able to create these. And you mentioned Pepsi and using the Pepsi bottles as part of the Chihuly video that you're working on for Artrageous with Nate, which is a great idea, but you're also working with Pepsi right now in another way to try to get some funding, right?
Yeah, exactly. We went ahead and applied for a Refresh Everything grant, and we decided to do it because they have a challenge grant every month, and this one just happened to be, how can you make learning fun? And honestly, I was like, we've got to apply for this grant. And so it's been a little crazy, but it's all based on voting, which is kind of nice because it's, you know, you can't buy your way into this. It's all about community support.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been like awesome because I've got all these people on Facebook and museums, the Children's Museum, and they're all just getting the word out to vote daily the entire month of November.
So you can vote often.
Exactly.
It's not just vote once. You can vote like every day. You can vote through, and let me see if I got this right. If you go to the Outrageous with Nate website, there's actually a link there to vote, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's going to take you to three different things.
Okay.
One is you can actually just text message a vote, which mm-hmm. is real easy, and the information's there as well. It's super simple. You just text message a number to Pepsi, and that's a vote. Or you go on to refresheverything.com. You just type in Artrageous in the search, and that'll pull up our grant. We have a commercial on there, a 30-second commercial for Pepsi that explains our grant, what we're wanting to do with it. But yeah, all that information's on our webpage and links, and just
can you vote through Facebook as well?
You can log in through Facebook and vote as well. So there's three ways you can vote every day, which obviously we're encouraging to just get as many people as we can voting.
Because if you get this grant, it'd be 50,000, right? And the voting goes through the end of November.
The end of November.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of time left
yes,
to keep voting.
We do.
I know you guys are doing well right now. This is a national competition.
Yes, it is.
So I mean, the fact that you're like in first place right now as you're, you know, competing and stuff, but we got to keep you there, and
exactly.
we want to make sure, you know, you get the money so that you can make more of these videos, which is a very cool thing. So we definitely want people to get out there. Do you have the text number?
Yes, we do. Okay. Actually, all you have to do is you're texting this number to Pepsi, and you just put in the message. You put 109-868, and you're texting it to Pepsi, which is 73774. You hit send, and literally it takes 2 seconds, and that's it. They don't spam you. They won't send anything else. It's just a real simple way
cool.
to vote.
Give us those numbers one more time.
Yeah, sure. You're going to text 109-868 to 73774.
Okay, very good. Now, I'm sure your kids, your students have got to be so excited about this.
Oh, yeah.
I know you feature some students in the videos, and obviously you've been making them for them. So what do they think about all this?
Yeah, I mean, that to me is what's the most exciting part. You know, the feedback from adults is great, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. obviously I'm trying to reach older elementary children. And, yeah, I mean, their feedback is what's most important to me. And seeing them, you know, I get kids that'll email me a picture that they made based on the show, or they say, hey, I went to the museum and I saw that painting. And, you know, they're just really excited about that. And, you know, my overall goal is I want kids to understand, one, how important the arts are,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also excited because then they are starting to realize, like, being creative, being innovative is much broader than, you know, papers and pencils. And I'm really trying to get them just to understand how important that is in their life in general, because I think if I can help instill some of that, you know, I think that's kind of that can relate to any profession. So being
Absolutely.
A little more creative and innovative. So, yeah, I mean, seeing the kids excited about it and wanting to know, like, when's the next one and where can I see it? And
what's the age group here? About 7, 8, 9, 10?
Yeah, I'd say upper elementary. See, maybe like 7 to maybe 12.
Okay.
It seems to be
yep.
the age group that we seem to be reaching the most.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So definitely, if you've got kids, check out the website, watch the video on Surratt, and look for more very cool Artrageous with Nate videos coming soon, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
Travis DiNicola with Nate Heck, the creator of the Artrageous with Nate video series. You can check out the videos and vote for them for a Pepsi Refresh grant by visiting artrageouswithnate.com. Artrageouswithnate.com, just like it sounds. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Ron Caltabiano, new dean of Butler University's Jordan College of Fine Arts, wants us to be less modest. Dr. Caltabiano, who received his bachelor's, master's, and doctorate of music degrees from the Juilliard School, joined the Butler family in August of this year. He visited with Sharon Gamble and explained why he wants Hoosiers to blow their own horns more, how he plans to get Butler more integrated in the broader community, and why youthful pride almost cost him the chance to work with Aaron Copland.
Well, I have to say you've had the experience of both coasts, New York and San Francisco. Where did you start out?
I'm a New Yorker at origin. Lived my first 35 years, first on Long Island and then Manhattan. I went to school there forever. I was, it's true. I started at Juilliard Prep when I was 16 and got my undergrad, master's, and doctorate and finished when I was 26.
Oh my gosh.
and then moved to San Francisco about 15 years ago.
So this is your first experience. Well, of course, you've traveled with, you know, with your career as a composer. I know you've been all over the country, but this is your first experience actually living in the Midwest.
That's true.
What were your worries coming in?
Oh, that's such a good question, because I had several. I worried that there wouldn't be enough art. I worried that there wouldn't be enough to do in general. I worried that I'd be eating red meat and fried foods for the rest of my life. I worried that as a gay man, I might not be comfortable here.
Oh, my goodness.
And strike one, strike two, strike three, strike four. There's plenty to do. In fact, we're out... we could certainly be out 7 nights a week. We've recently, my partner and I, have made a pact that we're going to spend at least one night at home every week. there's arts just everywhere. Mm-hmm. There is great food. And, you know, it may not be on every corner like it is in San Francisco, but look and you'll find. There are lots of great places. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just a very welcoming community. Mm-hmm. So we are really comfortable. I'm really excited to be here. Just busy as can be.
Our story, the story of the Heartland in general, we are, as a friend of mine who's from Evanston, but has lived in New York his entire adult life. He's a playwright, and he just refers to this part of the country as flyover zone. It's where you fly over to get to the real cities. That's what everybody thinks from the outside, but it's kind of like the old car rental car commercial, we're number two, we try harder. We really do, because we are not an arts mecca. We're far from it, by reputation.
Well, I tell you, you know, that flyover mentality is perhaps, well, it's wrong, but it's perhaps acceptable for someone from the coast to start with. But I sure hope we don't have it as a city ourselves. There's so much here to be proud of, and things that we should be shouting from the skyscrapers. And you know, one thing I'll say about Indianapolis and Hoosiers in general is that we're modest.
Yeah.
And, you know, already I'm saying we. I feel very at home here. I think that I'm not going to be a modest Hoosier.
Good for you. It has to start somewhere. speaking of not being modest, you have quite the resume, and oh my gosh, the people you studied composition with, Peter Maxwell Davies, Elliot Carter, Vincent Persichetti, conducting with Gennady Rozhdestvensky, but I gather that one of the musicians who most formed your philosophy was Aaron Copland. Talk about starting to work for him.
That's interesting. I worked for Boosey and Hawkes one summer. Mm-hmm. When I was in Manhattan, just for a little spending money, and I got to know some folks there pretty well. And then a couple of years later, I was finishing my doctoral program, and the president of Boosey called me and said, Aaron's decades-long assistant is retiring. And we wondered if you might want to come in and talk about that.
What an honor to even be thought of to be asked.
I thought so.
And when you picked the phone back up, having dropped it on the floor, you said?
Well, you know, I have to be honest here. I did what only a 25-year-old could do.
Oh, okay. Go on.
I said, you know...
It's not what I'd planned to do this year.
It's not really in my agenda. And I said worse. I said, you know, Aaron's a great composer, but you know, I don't get it. And so I said, but you know, let me think about this. And so, fortunately, I came to my senses, and within about 40 minutes was back on the phone. and said, you know, I'm a rash kid, and Copeland would working with Aaron Copeland would be a phenomenal job. And when can I start?
Aww.
And what does he need? And how can I help? And that began a relationship of about 5 years.
What were your duties?
You know, a lot of what I did was let the publisher know what the lawyer said about what the accountant was doing. So it was sort of keeping all the pieces together. But I also had some wonderful experiences diving into the music and doing research. So a conductor would write to Aaron and say, you know, in bar 146 of the Second Symphony, I think it ought to be a G sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron would look at me and say, well, go figure that out.
Cool.
and so I had some wonderful experiences like that and working in the archives and just... You know, the best part, though, was just getting to know this incredible man, this very, very sweet man that had enormous stature.
And apparently a fair amount of modesty, going back to that word again, because the anecdote you just told, that's an example of, you know, he could have just made a snap decision and said, of course it's not a G sharp. I didn't intend that. Leave it as written.
Right.
He handed it off to you. You're just getting started in your career.
Right, right. He was a very modest man. He let his art speak for itself. He was also very fortunate that his art did speak so well to so many people. So he was an artist that was blessed to have the right voice for the right culture at the right time.
Hmm. Did he influence you as a composer at all?
I can't say that he did especially, except that as he influences all American composers. His ideas about writing a music that is unvaryingly American and finding out what that means. And you know, it's different for all of us in the field, what it means to be an American composer. But I hold that it's different than being a European composer, than being an Asian composer, than being an Australian composer. And we each find that path in different ways. But I think we have Aaron to look at, to look up to as being one who did it so well, so convincingly, and leaves a mark on American music that will last forever, I'm sure.
What is an artist citizen?
An artist citizen is a great dancer, choreographer, painter, conductor, who knows the value of arts to a city, to a country, to a culture. And who can talk about that and advance the cause of culture in American society? And, you know, I know why you're asking that, because at the Jordan College at Butler, I believe that we are making artist citizens. I worked in conservatories most of my life. I went to school, as I said, at a conservatory. I then was at the Manhattan School of Music. I was at the Peabody Conservatory. You know, we used to talk about how many hours could I spend in the practice room today? And I recently mentioned that the pianists used to compete. You know, I spent 7 hours in the practice room yesterday. Well, I spent 9. Well, I had dinner in my practice room, and that was great because those folks had the fastest fingers and played the longest and the loudest and the fastest. But I'm not sure how many of them, and how many artists in general who are in conservatories, can also talk about the value of the NEA and to know if they're in touch with their city councilmen, their state representatives, and their federal representatives about the value of the arts in society, the value of leaving more behind than more money and more guns. That's not what a society is about.
It sounds as though you want to ensure that Butler students and faculty and staff, I imagine as well, break out of the microcosm, the hothouse, the enclosed society that is a conservatory world, and find a broader humanities context or a broader...
Absolutely. And Butler does that so well on campus, but now it's time to move the art students off campus. And so when I talk about advocacy for the arts, I'm not talking about the advocacy for the arts at Butler. I'm talking about how we can make a difference to the city of Indianapolis. I had a frightening conversation with a student on the weekend.
Yeah.
Who's a senior. And this fellow, I was talking about the new Schwantner premiere happening at the symphony this mm-hmm. Friday and Saturday, and mm-hmm. I'm of course going to be there. And I asked him if he was coming, and he said no. And I asked him, well, when was the last time he was at the symphony? And he said that in 4 years in the city of Indianapolis, he has never been to the symphony.
The awful, unsettling suspicion that was going to be the end of the story. That's stunning.
Right. It is stunning. It's stunning for a musician. It's stunning for a 20-something that's just getting out in the world. And it's stunning that somehow we are not doing our job if we are not getting our students out into the community. With artists, I expect my students to be at the symphony, to be at the Phoenix Theater and the IRT and the ballet concerts and the art galleries, and that's something that I'm looking for ways to facilitate at Butler. I think it may be job one. It may be the most important thing that we do.
Hmm. Speaking of balance, how have you, as an academic, balanced your career as an artist with all of your responsibilities? Because I know there are only so many hours in the day, and you have a lot of responsibilities and a lot of ambition, probably in both of those fields, by the way.
Well, yes and no. I'm not composing now, and I have not been composing for about 6 years.
And by choice?
Absolutely. Hmm. About 6 years ago, about 16 years ago, I became a little less happy with what I was doing. Mm-hmm. It was more about work and less about love and passion. And I always thought to myself that if there came a time that I got up in the morning and I didn't have to compose, that I probably ought to stop. If I wasn't driven so much from the inside to do this, then that's probably the wrong field.
Mm-hmm.
And there came a time, 15, 16 years ago, when I began to feel a little bit of that. And I struggled with it, and I kept composing. And I wrote some good pieces and some bad pieces and kept composing and kept working. And then I decided that that was the case, that I was no longer absolutely driven to write music at every moment that I had in my life. And it was time then that I found a part two. I've been interested in arts advocacy and arts education for a very long time as a sideline to being a composer. And this wonderful thing happened when I moved into part two. I began to have more time, a lot of time, for arts advocacy and arts education. So I'm having an incredible time in my life. I'm probably having more fun now than I ever had before. Being in a leadership position in education, and I hope to take on a leadership position in arts advocacy in the city of Indianapolis.
Sharon Gamble with Dr. Ron Caltabiano, new dean of Butler University's Jordan College of Fine Arts. Learn more about Dr. Caltabiano and about Butler's arts programs at butler.edu and then /JCFA for Jordan College of Fine Arts. Sharon.
Travis.
I know that Thanksgiving's coming up soon, and this is the time of year you love to make that noise, so go ahead and get the gobble out. Okay. And we have lots of other things to be thankful for on that calendar we call.
What will we do? You should go out and burn calories now in anticipation of next week's big feast day.
There you go. Run around with some things.
Hey, you can't go this week, but I'm telling you about it because you want to schedule it ahead of time. At the Morris Butler House, you can experience a traditional Victorian holiday tea on December 3rd, 10th, and 17th from from 1 to 3, and take a tour of the home as well. Great multi-generation girl activity. Moms, grandmoms, granddaughters.
Very good. Hey, at the Athenaeum, the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library is holding a screening of a movie called The Cats of Murakatani, and also an art show and discussion with the film director. And this is a film that has won many, many awards and been in some, like, over 75 film festivals, and it's the journey of a Japanese-American artist from the perspective of a filmmaker, and of course there's cats involved too, which is where you get the story of The Cats of Murakatani. If you're a film fan, a Vonnegut fan, this is coming up on November 25th at the Athenaeum. There's also more information at thevonnegutlibrary.org to find all about this.
Speaking of cats, you can journey through more than 20 Broadway shows and spend the evening with the cast of Lion King. Cats, get it? Big cats?
Oh, there you go.
As well as Wicked, Mamma Mia, and as they say, many, many more. In Forbidden Broadway, the Actors Theater of Indiana version is on stage just through this weekend, so go quickly. It's up at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel.
Very good. Hey, lots of fun stuff going on Mass Ave with the Holiday Hoopla. 6 weeks of Holiday Hoopla, in fact. If you're listening to us Friday night, they've got Midnight Shopper going on in the 400 block until midnight tonight. Next Friday, after Thanksgiving, from Mass Ave to Monument Circle, you can head over to the Circle for the lighting of the world's largest Christmas tree. And then on Friday the 2nd for First Friday, there's all the galleries and shops and restaurants and theaters for Mass Ave will be open for the holidays, of course.
Speaking of the holidays, if you have somebody in your life who likes beads, give him or her an early holiday present and go hear a free talk at the Toby at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. It's coming up on Thursday, December 8th at 7 o'clock. It's the history of beads, which have been used throughout history and around the world as charms, status symbols, religious objects, and as they say, many, many more. The talk is by Lois Sherdubin, author of The History of Beads from 100,000 BC to the present.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Hey, something else that's kind of neat is the Great American Antique Market is going on this weekend. The Caribbean Cove Hotel and Water Park, it goes on all day Saturday until 6 p.m. And it is an antique market that benefits, actually, NAMI of Indianapolis, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and definitely worth checking out. More information at namiindy.org.
One last thing for you to put on your calendar for First Friday, the First Friday show on December 2nd at Indiana Landmarks 1201 Gallery. The art gallery has a name now, 1201 Gallery.
I saw that. How cool.
Yeah, I know. It features members of Indiana Artisan. Hey, will we see a certain chocolatier
you
there?
You just never know.
Mm-hmm. there will be
art and chocolate crafts.
Art and chocolate, oil paintings, and foods of all kinds. And that's on December 2nd from 6 to 9 at 1201 North Central Avenue.
Very cool. Hey, last thing I got, there's going to be so many nutcrackers, you can't even shake a nutcracker at them coming up soon. But if you're looking for some other ballet, the Indianapolis City Ballet is presenting Sleeping Beauty from the Bolshoi live from the Bolshoi on November 20th. It's actually going to be shown in different movie theaters around town, which is a very, very cool thing. It's David Hallberg in this incredible debut with his American premiere at the Bolshoi. Worth checking out. Get more information at IndianapolisCityBallet.org.
Not about Christmas or New Year's or Thanksgiving. The Three Musketeers on stage as part of IU Opera Theater's season through this weekend. So if you want to do some swashing and buckling, check that out.
That sounds excellent. We'll be back next week with some turkeys and more fun things to do on
What'll We Do?
Things to be thankful for.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
This holiday season, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra has at least a few stockings full of different concerts for all types of audiences, including bringing in world-renowned pianist Long Long performing Beethoven right before Thanksgiving, the Yuletide Celebration featuring Broadway stars Liz Callaway and Ann Hampton Callaway and Cirque performers,
Handel's Messiah with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, a classical Christmas with Raymond Lepard, and a New Year's Eve program with Dance Kaleidoscope. Travis DiNicola spoke with the ISO's Tim Northcutt and assistant principal violist Beverly Scott about the upcoming performances.
There's a lot going on at the Symphony this holiday season, especially kicking off the season with a performance by Long Long, which is taking place right before Thanksgiving. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, he's coming in for an all Beethoven program. He plays the Beethoven First Piano Concerto. We're also doing the overture to The Creatures of Prometheus and a very familiar symphony to us, Beethoven's Symphony No. 7.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to have Long Long come back. He was here in May of 2006 when he made his ISO debut, and it's been far too long to have him back.
He's sort of a rock star of the classical world, or
he certainly is, and I like his interpretations of certain things. He has a different spin, and I'd kind of like for Beverly to talk a little bit about that, just because when he was here as an example with the Mozart, I'm sure you had an interesting perspective since you're a pianist as well as a violist.
That's right, yeah, and that particular Mozart concerto is one that I happen to have played, and I was interested to see what Long Long would do with it, because his reputation is made chiefly with the more exuberant, virtuosic literature of the latter part of the 19th century. And
this is a little more subtle?
I had never heard him play Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
And often if one has played a piece, you tend to have your approach to it that... And can easily be intolerant of someone who approaches it differently.
Yeah.
In his case, I was very intrigued. He approached it quite differently, but I was delighted. It was a wonderful experience, and I look forward to his now performance of the Beethoven First, which is again much more in the classical mode than his. And the repertoire he's most famous for.
Sounds like you essentially heard the music in a new way through that interpretation.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's got to be very exciting.
A very different approach, but one which, as I say, delighted me.
Excellent. So so that concert again, tell me specifically when that's coming up.
It is Tuesday, November 22nd at 7:30 at the Hilbert Circle Theater. We still have good seats available, so buy now.
Okay. Good. So that's a great way to enjoy some fantastic music right before Thanksgiving.
And Long Long is such a superstar. He's to the point now where he's doing single dates.
Yeah.
Because he's in such demand all over the world. So this is a great opportunity to hear him play a marvelous concerto by a great master who was a pianist himself.
Excellent, excellent. So definitely something worth looking forward to. And then things really get in that holiday spirit with the Yuletide celebration, of course, which is always such a huge event for everybody here in Indianapolis, and the Symphony's always done such a great job with it. This year featuring some great Broadway stars as well as some circus performers.
Yeah, we're real excited for this 26th annual edition of Duke Energy Yuletide Celebration. It features Sisters. Noted jazz artist and songwriter Ann Hampton Calloway, who wrote the theme song to the TV show The Nanny, and numerous other songs for Barbara Streisand, and her sister, who's a Broadway star, Liz Calloway. They're going to be co-hosts. Plus, we're bringing in aerialists and acrobats from the famed troupe Cirque de la Symphonie, which is a spinoff from Cirque du Soleil.
I saw them last June when they were in town
performing
with the symphony, and that was such a tremendous concert. It was really fun. I got to say, Beverly, were you a part of the, were you playing?
I was, yes. Amazing.
So much fun for me was actually watching all of the musicians, watching them at times, watching the performers, especially the aerialists, when they were up above the stage and performing right above your heads. And there was a real sense of... I guess appreciation on both parts. You could tell that the circus performers, you know, just loved the music you were playing, and you could get a real sense from the musicians, I thought, that you guys were very impressed with their artistry as well.
Most decidedly. Very very different arts, but as far as I could tell, extraordinary performances.
No worries about one of them like dropping into your lap.
I was far enough from the edge of things that I wasn't worried. But
it's great that that you guys are bringing them back as part of the Yuletide celebration. I think that'll be a lot of fun, certainly. Yeah. So tell me more about what else is part of Yuletide this year.
Well, this year's show includes some new elements. What we've done is we've enhanced what we call the Enchanted Toy Shop, and that's where the Cirque de la Symphonie artists will be featured. And also we're going to be doing the World Symphonic premiere of two songs from the Broadway musical Elf. The songs are Sprinkle Jolly, Twinkle Jingly, and There's a Santa Claus. Plus, Jack Everly has created a wonderful medley this year that I'm looking forward to hearing. He calls it Yuletide Jukebox. And it features pop holiday tunes such as The Beach Boys' Little Saint Nick, Merry Christmas, Darling by The Carpenters, the Jackson 5's rendition of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and Paul McCartney's wonderful Christmas Time, among others. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're going to do a couple other of contemporary holiday tunes, including Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas is You, and then the beautiful song Mary Did You Know that was originally recorded by Kathy Mattea and later by Kenny Rogers and Wynonna Judd, will also be showcased. Plus, we're going to do the usual traditional holiday favorites such as I'll Be Home for Christmas, Silent Night, Carol of the Bells, Oh Holy Night, Angels We've Heard on High, and of course, you've got to have the Tap Dancing Santas.
Well, of course.
And 'Twas the Night Before Christmas with the Flying Reindeer Puppets and Santa himself.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be Christmas without them. It's really fun you're bringing in some music from Elf. You know, I got to say, I mean, that Will Ferrell movie, you know, when I first heard about it, I'm like, oh, really? You know, and then I saw it. My wife's a big fan of it, actually. And it's a delightful holiday movie, and there's some great music from that.
And the musical is wonderful as well, and that the adaptations, the scores that they created for the musical were quite nice, and because the tunes are so great that you know, they granted us permission to do a couple of them, and that
we have
orchestrated, and it ought to be a special treat for everybody.
And you have many performances of Yuletide.
28 to be exact.
Okay.
And that includes matinee performances, super saver performances, where you can save a little bit money, bring in your families on. But you have to go to the website to figure out which ones those are, or have a schedule in front of you, because it's only certain nights and certain times.
Sure.
But it's a great opportunity to celebrate the holidays with us, and we love seeing those smiling faces in the Hilbert Circle Theater.
You know, Tim, I'm going to take a moment here just to congratulate you guys on your website, because I think that it may be the best designed website for any performing arts venue in town in terms of so easily being able to find exactly where you want to sit and buy your ticket. I really appreciate when I go to your website.
Not only can you pick the exact seats, you know, in real time what's available.
Exactly,
but
which is
you
great.
can look at the screen and see up in the upper right hand corner
a little like view
the
of
view
what it's
that
be
you're
like.
Going to
yeah.
have
it's
from that seating
fantastic.
Area.
I got to say, it's extremely easy to use and very well designed.
Well, thank you very much. We're here to make it as friendly as possible.
So tell me about the Messiah this year.
Well, before we're doing Messiah, we're doing our 14th annual classical Christmas concert at Scottish Rite Cathedral Ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
On December 10th, Raymond Leppard created this 14 years ago. As you know, he's our marvelous conductor laureate. And
this is really nice. I've attended this a couple times. And again, this is not down at the Hilbert. This is at Scottish Rite. And it's just a beautiful setting in that large ballroom with that amazing ornate woodwork and that you turn into a concert setting.
It turns into such a warm and intimate atmosphere when you get all the people in there and the poinsettias decorating the stage and such. And this year we're welcoming back an Indianapolis audience favorite and who the orchestra loves and classical musical lovers truly love, two-time Grammy Award-winning soprano Sylvia McNair, who actually made her professional debut with the ISO when she was a vocal student at Indiana University in 1979. She sang Bach's Mass, I believe, with John Nelson conducting in Columbus, Indiana, in November of 79.
Oh, that's great.
And she has been with us. This will be her 31st set of appearances with us. She hosted Yuletide, in fact,
yes,
back in 2003. But
Now, for the Classical Christmas with Raymond Leppard, which night is that?
That is Saturday, December 10th,
mm-hmm.
and that is at 5:30, I believe.
And Beverly, will you be performing that night?
We don't know the string assignments yet.
Okay.
Or at least I don't know them.
Yes, that concert is at 5:30, so it's a special concert start time of 5:30 on December 10th at Scottish Rite Cathedral.
Okay.
And we will be doing Fauré's Requiem in D minor. We're also, Raymond has arranged three Scottish folk songs, which feature the tunes My Love's Like a Red, Red Rose, There's Nothing to Soothe, and Dance to Your Daddy. Plus, he also has taken a medley of English Christmas carols, old-time English Christmas carols. That includes Lord of the Dance, I Saw a Fair Maiden, and On Christmas Night, among
Very
others.
Good.
And it's just it's a chamber-sized orchestra in a mm-hmm. marvelous setting. We also have the Apollo's Voice Chamber Chorus, which is mm-hmm. some of the top-notch IU vocal students.
Sure. I know they've been
in
a
the
part
school,
of this in the past
and they
as
are,
well.
They are flat out amazing.
Beverly, let me ask you a question, though, because this is sort of an interesting thing. With so many different concerts going on during the holiday season, and you know, there's a lot of musicians that are part of the ISO, but at the same time, there's only so many. I mean, how does that work? You said you haven't found out your the string assignments yet. So, you know, when do you find out, you know, which concert you're going to be performing at, or how does that work? Give us a little behind the scenes understanding of this from a musician standpoint.
Yeah. On the since Yuletide is as Tim has said, we perform 28 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's our principal activity. There's room, for instance, for only 6 viola players, and a corresponding percentage of those from the other string sections on the Yuletide stage, since mm-hmm. the orchestra occupies only about half of the stage. So that leaves room for others when we're in the weeks when we do Messiah, for instance. Some of us will be assigned to Messiah, usually 4, 5, 6 players for that.
Okay.
The Classical Christmas typically, I think, has 4 violas, so that comes in a week different from Messiah typically. So we
is there like a call board that you check to see?
Yes, or? Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So you guys really have to be ready and nimble, essentially.
We'll be given our rotation probably very soon here, maybe even this coming week.
Okay.
And so that we have a sheet telling us where to go when.
Very good. Must be interesting to keep track of sometimes, I'm sure.
Yeah. You don't want to be in the wrong place, that's for sure.
So, Tim, okay, tell me about Messiah, please.
I'm going to spend just a little time just telling you that it's Saturday, December 17th at 8 o'clock at Clues Memorial Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your tickets through Ticketmaster for this one, because it is at Clues Memorial Hall.
Okay.
So go to the Ticketmaster website or call 239-1000 for that particular concert. But you've probably played Messiah many, 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 many times as a musician during your career.
Number of times.
You go ahead and talk about your impressions of the piece and your thoughts. Cause
I love it. Text and music.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a wonderful experience to play Messiah for me. And there's a connection, actually, between the Long Long concert and Messiah. Some who attended, I can't name the date, but I believe it was Mr. Campastorini, the conductor for the Long Long concert,
mm-hmm.
who directed us and Messiah 2, 3, 4
2 years ago.
Ago 2 years ago,
wow,
okay.
2 years ago.
Oh, that's
and,
excellent.
And got rave reviews from the musicians, and so we've got him back here in short order.
Very good, very good. I can tell you're looking forward to playing that.
I am.
And then New Year's Eve, there's a special program with Dance Kaleidoscope.
Yes, we're collaborating. This will be the third consecutive year we've collaborated with Dance Kaleidoscope. And this concert will be conducted by a conductor who's making his debut with us. He's a dynamic young conductor from New York by the name of Ryan McAdams. And also, we're going to have a soprano from Italy who also will make her ISO debut. It's Grazia D'Oranzio. And what we try to do with this concert, we meld what the Viennese tradition is for New Year's. As you know, in Vienna for hundreds of years, the Vienna Philharmonic has played Strauss family waltzes, polkas, etc. on New Year's Eve.
Okay.
And then the Vienna State Opera on New Year's Day does arias from various Viennese operas, Franz Lehár, etc. And this program kind of melds those two. We'll do Overture to Die Fledermaus. Dance Kaleidoscope is going to dance in the Emperor Waltzes, the Thunder and Lightning Polka, and of course, on the beautiful Blue Danube Waltzes.
Mm, very nice.
Plus, there's going to be a fun little segment in there, and I want everybody to really put their thinking caps on that are going to be at this concert, because there's going to be a thing that's called Name That Tune.
Okay.
And they're going to play selections from various classical or pop pieces, and the audience has to guess. There might even be some prizes or something. I don't know. I don't know the particulars of that. But it's always a very elegant and fun evening. Make an entire evening of it if you come to New Year's Eve with the ISO, because we have dinner at the Symphony, which is a sumptuous buffet up in the Wood Room that you can pre-order. Then you've got the concert that starts at 9 o'clock, goes up till basically the stroke of midnight. Well, our fake stroke of midnight, I guess. And then in the lobby, we have a party where we do a champagne toast. We have a cash bar and light hors d'oeuvres, and everybody dances to the Paul Burns Orchestra. So
fun.
It's just a wonderful way to ring in the new year. And tickets are for a regular seat are between $30 and $65 each. Plus, we have what we call champagne box seats, where it's $150 per couple. And you get personal waiter service at a table that's set up in one of the orchestra boxes in the back of the hall, plus a split of champagne and chocolates. So
that sounds like a great night.
It's a wonderful way to ring in the new year.
Travis DiNicola with violist Beverly Scott and Tim Northcutt from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. For more information on their upcoming holiday shows, visit indianapolissymphony.org. Please listen again to The Art of the Matter next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I'll get a preview of Heather Ramsey's new Christmas album.
I'll find out about a unique auction coming up of prehistoric Native American birdstone sculptures.
And I'll find out about the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's holiday carol concert. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.